This is The Cable.
How much retail ownership is in stock?
Tech story is front and center.
What will this wind up doing to the cost curve?
Your connection from the London market close to the US market action.
A significant sell-off in European assets.
So it feels like a lot of these stocks have already priced that in.
This is a stock that is increasingly being shorted.
The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele.
Behavioral challenges from the pandemic could linger for years
on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening. You're listening to The Cable on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio. I'm Alex Steele in New York. I think Guy Johnson's over in London. We'll get to him in a second, hopefully. So it's a pretty ugly day that's evolving in the equity market. Let's just take a look here. We got the European stocks closing down a full percentage point. We have the FTSE down by 0.6%. The CAC is up by 1.3%. The DAX is off by 1.6%. A lot of this was actually led by the U.S. Yes, you have higher rates, but really it was the FedEx news. So FedEx is down over 20% here in the U.S. They scrapped their fiscal 2023 earnings forecast primarily because of Asia and challenges in Europe. And that's really putting a negative spin across all equity markets. And is this the beginning of a true earnings downgrade that we were kind of expecting was going to happen in the second quarter? But now will it really start in Europe as well as in the U.S.? And you're just seeing like asset class after asset class, like Meta here in the U.S. is having its potentially worst close since 2019. All of that feeding into the equity market, that's a snapshot of where we are. We'll get to that. We'll get to the energy crisis in Europe. We'll get to that all. And all happy anniversary, apparently, of Black Wednesday. That's something to talk about. That's 30 years. And we're seeing also the pound at the lowest level since 1985. We'll get to that. Right now, let's get to Charlie Pellett.
Hi, thank you very much. And here's what's going on. Liz Truss will meet with Joe Biden for the first time as Prime Minister on Sunday when the American president visits Britain for the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth. A source says the premier will welcome him to Downing Street for talks, though Truss's office has made it clear it will be an informal conversation rather than a bilateral meeting because the U.K. remains in a period of national mourning. UK retail sales fell at the sharpest pace in 8 months in August as a worsening cost of living crisis and plunging confidence forced consumers to cut back on spending. The 1.6% drop was more than three times the decline predicted by economists and reflects the squeeze on households from soaring energy bills and inflation near a 40-year high. FedEx cannot ignore that major market story today, both in the United Kingdom and here in the U.S. It saw its biggest stock drop since at least 1980, down now by 23% after withdrawing its earnings forecast on worsening business conditions, a potentially worrying sign for the global economy. The package delivery giant flagged weakness in Asia and challenges in Europe as it pulled its prior outlook and reported preliminary results for the latest quarter that fell well short of Wall Street's expectations. So FedEx raising major questions about both the state of the global economy and the outlook for corporate earnings. That's the latest from the news desk. Alex Steele, back to you now here in New York.
You're a good person to ask about this. You love to travel. You're actually going to the UK next week, right?
Exactly. Enthusiastically can't wait to get on a plane. I will be there landing at Heathrow 1 week from today.
So that's pretty exciting. Have you spent less buying stuff because you're now getting to travel a lot again?
No, I haven't, because typically, and I guess I'm not indicative of the broader economy. I tend not to buy a lot of stuff anyway.
True.
And
okay,
I've always liked to spend money on travel, and I'm excited to go to the UK. On the one hand, the exchange rate is phenomenal, changing money this weekend. Can't wait to do that. On the other hand, though, I'm a little bit nervous about finding out when I go to Costa Coffee or Nero Coffee, just how much more is that cup of coffee going to cost because of inflation in the United Kingdom. Hotel prices through the roof, so much higher than I have ever paid for a hotel in London.
Okay, so basically the exchange rate is better, but when you get there,
exactly,
everything is so much more expensive.
Everything's
going to cost more. I wonder if it's going to even out as if we were at two times or something?
Exactly. We will find out when I get there. But nonetheless, just excited to be there. And it's really funny because, my wife and I travel in very different ways. I'm looking forward to riding trains and buses and taking public transportation. Forget taking taxis anywhere. You know, I like the idea of getting on a train. But that's another source of concern as I head over to the United Kingdom. Potential disruptions from strikes. I haven't heard anything about strike days on the days that I'm scheduled to travel. But on the other hand, trains are being disrupted on the line that I'm going on. And instead of a one-way ticket, I now have to make a connection to get up to the small town of Chester from the United Kingdom. Coming back, it's going to take a lot longer than I thought. So, you know, there's all sorts of issues. But you know what? I'm the kind of a guy, I don't mind hanging out.
No, you know, you're gonna like talk to all the people about issues. That's what you're gonna do.
Exactly. You know, I love being on trains. I love, and Alex, this is the thing. Everybody has a story. No matter what they do, everybody has a fascinating story. And that is absolutely true in the United Kingdom.
Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing about your trip. What are you going to be asking them the most, I wonder? This is going to be a really good barometer.
You know, well, it has nothing to do with the economy. I'm always very curious about war stories. And I'm always fascinated to hear what people have to say. You know, I'm sort of that age, not obviously not World War II. But
are you talking literal war stories? Or are you talking
I'm not having to do with the economy and heating bills. You know, I've got family members over there who will tell me all those things. But especially older people in England. It's a topic that a lot of people just don't want to talk about. I mean, it's a topic my mom didn't really want to talk about. It's a topic that my dad very much didn't enjoy talking about. He would tell stories about the bombings of certain parts of London where he was living and his evacuation down to Bristol from London as a kid. So, you know, but those are the stories I like to hear from everyday people in the United Kingdom, and what better place than perhaps on public transportation, unless I pick up on the cue that the person doesn't want to talk, in which case I shut the hell up.
See, Charlie's the best. He can read the room and
talk
until the end of time. Charlie, thank you. I appreciate it. We appreciate you sticking around with me. We had some technical issues, but I think they are fixed now. So I'm going to bring Guy Johnson in London. Can you hear me? Are you back with me?
I can hear you.
Excellent. Okay.
I've got a brilliant echo, so I can hear myself as well. So if the engineers are listening, it would be fantastic if they could fix that.
Excellent. Well, joining us, because also I was mentioning earlier, today is the 30th anniversary of Black Wednesday, and that's when you had the decimation of the pound when it wound up leaving the ERM. Wait, I'm trying to find my notes here. See, I'm used to having you here, and then you're not there, and you're going to talk about British stuff.
Norman Lamont is the Chancellor.
Okay. History lesson.
The British pound has gone into the exchange rate mechanism, which was basically tracking the German Deutschmark. We went into the ERM at too high a level, and then the Deutschmark basically appreciated from there. We got to the point where it was untenable. Basically, the market was taking a different view of the value of the pound than we were seeing in terms of the way that the government were fixing it. It was not sustainable. Soros built up this big position, and as a result of which we got Black Wednesday. Interest rates got jacked up twice during the day, and then ultimately we came out, Norman Lamont had to do it, and rates fell, and the pound fell precipitously.
But I think
that's the history. And the good news is the echo's gone.
Good, I'm glad. While I was frantically trying to search for the exact definition of ERM, but I think it also nicely highlights when you wind up having central banks fighting the market, and the market just pushed this one and really forced that issue. And I feel like in that way, it sets us up in an interesting path for where we are now in markets with central banks.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that the central bank, the Bank of England, wasn't independent at that point. The government basically was telling the central bank what to do. And one of the reasons why we now have an independent central bank is because of what happened then. So basically, you've asked me kind of what happened, and I've given a vaguely smart response to that. There is somebody sitting next to me, Christine Aquino, who will be able to give a properly smart response to what on earth is going on here. So we're gradually ratcheting up the smartness.
Vaguely Christine, smart feels like a lot. Like, that feels like nice job.
No, I'm vaguely smart. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Christine is very smart. Christine, what were the implications of Black Wednesday, and what are the lessons and comparisons with where we are now?
Well, listen, Guy, I think back then it really was a verdict on the UK's ability to essentially create these structural support systems, right, that would allow the pound to stay in the exchange rate mechanism. Ultimately, it wasn't able to do that and had to decide that really the ERM was not for the UK at the time. And, you know, it was very much much kind of an experiment in a lot of ways, right? It was still kind of the early days of the European Union project and the Euro project in and of itself. And so it was kind of this, what you could say is a pipe dream of a path toward fiscal and monetary integration. Ultimately, as we see now, 30 years later, the UK isn't even in the European Union anymore. And it's a completely different story. Very similar moves in a pound. But I think today, the key difference is that what we're seeing now is very much a verdict on how the UK just has just handled.
So then it was the wrong level. Now it's just we've screwed up.
Yes. Now it is very much a report card of how the UK as a whole is doing, and it is not doing well.
Well, here's what I also am continually trying to understand. What part of, say, the cable rate, if we just take that, is really about UK weakness versus US strength? And if, as FedEx kind of highlighted, we're going to go into somewhat of an earnings recession at some point, at least in particular sectors, like, does that change a little bit?
Well, I think it's two sides of the same coin, right? I mean, the reason, for instance, that the pound is weak, of course, the flip side is just the dollar dominance that we've seen this year. But then the question to ask is, why has the dollar been so dominant? It is primarily because of the fact that the Fed has decided that it is going to take inflation by the reins and really try to do something very significant about it in the form of just multiple rate hikes, 75 basis points that we're talking here now. And, you know, when you compare that to what the Bank of England has done or has not managed to do, it really pales in comparison. And so this, again, segues very nicely into what we're going to see next week, because they are about to meet. In some ways, it's kind of a back-to-school moment for the Bank of England, because it's going to be the first post-summer meeting that we're going to see.
Yep.
And it's a momentous time. But what are they going to do? Are they going to be able to step up this time around?
Okay, so today's retail sales basically indicate that the UK consumer has hit a brick wall. I thought they hit a brick wall earlier on this year, but apparently there is another brick wall that we have now hit. And the Bank of England, if it looks at that data, would say we shouldn't be hiking by 75 basis points. Maybe we go 50. But if you look at what's happening with the pound, which has a big impact on imported inflation and what is happening on the energy front, maybe they need to keep up with the Fed and the ECB and do 75. Is that basically the framework in which we're operating?
I would agree with that entirely, Guy. I think that's exactly how they're probably thinking about it right now. You know, on the one hand, it is a very difficult time to be hiking as much as some of the other central banks are being pushed to do, just because of the state of the consumer, the state of the economy. It's especially true here in the UK. But on the other hand, if the pound does fall, I think a Bank of America estimated that if the trade-weighted pound falls another 5%, then it could add another 40 to 50 basis points of inflation. And we're already staring at four-decade highs, double-digit inflation. So imagine another 40 to 50 basis points on top of that.
Well, and that's where I think next week the rubber is going to meet the road with the fiscal and monetary policy. And Guy, you brought this up on television. And I've been thinking about this for the last couple of days, that are they working together or are they not working together? So if the central bank is like desperately trying to hike rates to control inflation, are the moves from the government on a fiscal level going to hurt that and their ability to do that? Discuss amongst yourselves.
Well, no, I thought Christine, as she is more smart than me, would be able to, or is she smarter than me, would be able to maybe answer that. It does feel to my mind as if they're pulling in slightly different directions, which is interesting because when we came out of the GFC, you had fiscal austerity and monetary policy was loosened. Now we've got the reverse of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, to that point, there was a little bit of this idea that, oh, perhaps the fiscal side of things can help the Bank of England do what they need to do to rein in inflation if we get more of that support from the government. I mean, Liz Truss's energy plan, to be fair, was a start in terms of kind of putting the pound in a more positive direction. We definitely saw that in terms of the immediate reaction on the day of the announcement. But again, I think what markets are looking for are details. How exactly are they going to be doing this? Will they need to borrow more in the market, which would ultimately hurt just the UK's credit standing, its borrowing costs, and all of that? In that window of time that maybe the fiscal strategy would be able to buy the Bank of England, will they be able to do what they need to do on the inflation front? All still very much unanswered questions.
Hopefully we'll get some answers next week. Like, I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think that's going to happen.
It would be nice to get some answers. The issue could be as well that ultimately the Bank of England has to assume that the inflationary, while inflation will be lower, it will be higher for longer. So it wouldn't get, it wouldn't, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be as high as it could have been, but we basically maybe just stretching it out a bit longer. And that's where the real challenge is ultimately going to lie here. Alex and I had a really fascinating conversation earlier on this in the session, talking with Tim Ash over at Blue Bay. He's now actively looking at what happens in a post-Putin era in Russia and whether or not that would change the energy story in Europe significantly. Mm-hmm. Could be, it could produce a really big shift, Alex.
Yeah, and I think he seems to think that that's not an unrealistic expectation anymore. He does seem to think that Putin's days are somewhat numbered. Thank you so much, Christina Kino, the amazingly smart Christina Kino.
And very patient.
And very patient. Hey, I'm the one that had to fill for like 9 minutes, or so it felt.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening. Welcome back. You are listening to The Cable. We are back on track. I'm Guy Johnson in London alongside Alex Steele over in the United States. We fixed our technology gremlins. We are back on track. Alex, as ever, today we have seen some incredible energy stories being broken by the Bloomberg Energy team. There's a couple of them that we're focusing on, one of which is basically the German nationalization of large parts mm-hmm. of its energy infrastructure. The other one is a really nice story written by Todd Gillespie and Monica Raymond a little earlier on Bloomberg, talking about the fact that Volkswagen is set for a multi-million euro windfall on a gas trade that has gone right. Here to explain is Todd, and to update us on what is happening more broadly, particularly with the energy infrastructure story out of Germany. First of all, let's talk about this Volkswagen story, because I think it's fascinating. We sometimes underestimate the scale of Volkswagen. You go to Wolfsburg, you kind of appreciate that this is, it's not a company, it's a town,
yeah.
it's a society, oh, yeah. it's like it's and it generates its own power.
Yeah, I mean, it's Europe's largest car manufacturer. It has two power station units. And it, you know, it's a company that made more than 8 billion euros in revenue, sorry, in operating profit just in the first quarter of this year. So this is a gargantuan company, right? It's also a company that has been burning coal at this power station for years, both to run its own operations, but also to fuel the city around it. And one of the plans that it had was to start transitioning these power stations away from coal towards cleaner energy in that case also means fossil fuels, but it means natural gas. So burning natural gas, you can sort of produce the same amount of energy but for, you know, less emissions. And one of the things that it was going to do was basically it bought up loads of gas back in 2020, saying, hey, we're going to be moving to gas-fired generation in 2023, so we'll start hedging now. Obviously we're getting to that point now, and the German government is saying, hang on, like, we should really be conserving gas right now. So it's basically allowed VW to like unwind this hedge at a massively inflated price. So when it bought this gas, it was around 30 euros per megawatt hour. Now it's selling back into a market around 200. We've essentially calculated that's going to potentially produce a windfall of about 400 million euros, basically just from hedging gone right.
So they're going to use coal though, right? Instead?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, one of the things about this is that, yeah, they might use some of this money to go back into the market and buy coal. They may have, I don't know for sure, but they may have hedged coal as well, just in case. You can imagine a big company like that doing that. But the impact of that might be limited. But coal is cheaper to burn than gas right now in Europe. It's not, you know, traditionally it's not been like that before this crisis. Coal is more expensive. You know, it's a bigger, you know, dry bulk. It's freight. It's, you know, all these different things. You can't just get in a pipeline from Russia. But now, because the price of gas has gone up so much, you can look at these spark dark spreads, they're called, on the terminal. But basically, you can see that the burning gas it is still way more expensive than burning coal for most of Europe right now.
So we're going to buy electric cars from Volkswagen, produced in Wolfsburg, produced
with
effectively
coal.
With coal.
Yes.
There's
yes.
something slightly wrong about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the irony is not lost on me. Yeah.
Made with lithium, produced in, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Middle of Africa.
Let's talk a little bit about what else is happening in Germany, and that is that the utility Uniper, the gas company that is Uniper, this giant gas importer, German gas importer, is effectively going to have to be nationalized, along with a whole load of other units. Just give me, again, just a sense of scale here about what we're talking about.
Yeah, so, I mean, Uniper is Germany's largest gas importer. So if we're talking about all the flows and everything that's been happening with Russia, you know, all of these things, when we're talking about Russia squeezing flows, I mean, what we're really talking about is Russia refusing to deliver contracts, refusing to deliver volumes of gas that were pledged to companies like Uniper. Essentially, that's sort of how this trading system works. You hedge in advance, you expect to receive the gas, but that gas just doesn't arrive. And it's massive companies like Uniper, like VNG, which is also in line for nationalization, and Gazprom Germania, which is now called Securing Energy for Europe, which is an
great
interesting
name. Mm.
Yeah, great name. So it's these three companies all now in line for nationalization. But, you know, Securing Energy for Europe, SEFI, it also owns, you know, and controls, controlling stakes in two of the largest gas storage units in Europe as well, along with VNG. VNG also has big gas storage too. So you're also talking about strategic reserves that, you know, were formerly essentially controlled by Russian-owned companies, or the private sector, you know, or companies now that are really on the rocks because their credit lines are shot. They're in bad trading positions. They're having people default on them. They are in, you know, basically their positions are sunk underwater. And they're, you know, they've basically not been able to fulfill much of the business that they promised to do. Mm-hmm. And now the government is saying, hang on, you know, there's just such a mess now. Our bailouts, you know, these multi billion euro bailouts that we've put forward, you know, we've come to the end of the line here. Let's just nationalize them.
I can't wrap my mind around how much money this is going to cost Europe. I mean,
yeah,
I have no reason to think that the buck's going to stop there.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, these companies right now are worth very little because of how bad their debt position is. So the nominal value that Germany's going to give to essentially the Finnish taxpayer for Uniper, you know, it's essentially owned by the Finnish taxpayer. So that's a whole other angle to this. But yeah, I mean, to acquire these companies is one thing, but to actually keep them running, to make them profitable in an environment like this, you know, it's not just the government sweeping in good times and kind of creaming off the profits of a company. These are distressed companies that are going to have to be bailed out with taxpayer funds. We're talking about armies of traders here, very well-paid people who are, you know, expecting to sort of try and put this situation right. Mm. And now they're going to be, essentially funded through German taxpayer money.
Yeah, we've seen the finance industry bailed out in the past. We are now effectively seeing the same thing again. In some ways, a sort of Lehman-style moment.
It sounds so familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. You just got to socialize the losses. We'll see ultimately how that goes down politically. I suspect the ripple effects of this is going to be felt for quite some time.
Yeah.
Todd, thank you very much indeed. Todd Gillespie, really appreciate the coverage you've delivered this week. I anticipate we'll continue to see it continuing next week. Up next, we'll get back to the markets. A bumpy, bumpy week for equity markets. We'll deal with the details next. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening. You're listening to The Cable. I'm Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio. I'm Alex Steele in New York. Guy Johnson is over in London. We are really picking up some more steam to the downside here. The S&P is now up by 1.6%. The Nasdaq off by almost a full 2 percentage points. We got the UMISH data that came out a few hours ago. Inflation expectations did roll over a little bit, but they still are staying persistently high. So there is still a question about how comfortable the consumer is right now dealing with the massive uncertainty. Then you get the likes of FedEx taking away their 2023 forecast, citing weakness in Asia as well as Europe. You have to wonder what comes next for the U.S. They also are going to have that stronger dollar impact. And is this the start of the earnings season downgrade that we've kind of all been waiting for? That is a snapshot of the market for you. Here is Charlie Pellett with more stories and updates.
And I thank you very much. Here's what's going on, Alex Steele. A surging tide of people ranging from London retirees to former England soccer captain David Beckham have lined up to file past Queen Elizabeth's coffin as it lies in state at Parliament, so many that authorities had to call a temporary halt to more people joining the miles-long queue. A live tracker of the queue to get into historic Westminster Hall said it was, quote, at capacity. An entry was being paused for 6 hours as waiting times reached 14 hours and the line stretched 5 miles from Parliament to Southwark Park and then around the park. Russian President Vladimir Putin has acknowledged Indian concerns over his invasion of Ukraine as he met Prime Minister Narendra Modi a day after he told his Chinese counterpart he understood Beijing's worries about the war. Speaking at the opening of talks today in Uzbekistan, Modi told Putin that, quote, today's era is not one for war. Liz Truss will be meeting President Joe Biden for the first time as Prime Minister on Sunday when the American president visits Britain for the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth. A source says the premier will welcome him to Downing Street for talks, though Truss's office has made it clear it will be an informal conversation rather than a bilateral meeting because the UK does remain in a period of national mourning. That is the latest from the news desk. Alex Steele, back to you now here in New York.
All right, Charlie, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. I also should point out, that here in the U.S., over $3 trillion worth of options are expiring today. So normally I would say it's hard to take this action seriously. But based on the last week, I would say we got to take this price action seriously.
It's been quite a week.
It has.
We basically had a massive run-up, which we've completely unwound, and a little bit more. And I think the story today is this story around FedEx. And we're going to talk a little bit more about it a little bit later on the program to get into the actual nitty-gritty of the details. But the signal, the macro signal it sends is, and this is part of the plumbing, the transport plumbing of the country, things are slowing down, and they talked about the speed of the slowdown.
Yeah, and you're also looking at a potentially higher terminal rate, as well as the real yield in the 10-year. Now we're at 1%. All of this working its way through the market. So let's get a professional view. This is something I never get to say. We have a guest in the studio that doesn't
in
work
New York.
At Bloomberg in New York. This is like a complete rarity. Alpesh Patel, he is the CEO of Prifinium Partners, joins me. It is such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Well, I've got a confession to make. I did used to work at Bloomberg many moons ago.
But this counts. No, this totally counts. You do
Don't
not have
burst
a permanent
a bubble.
Badge. It
Don't
counts.
Burst
exactly.
A bubble.
Okay, the price action. What do you make of it? What's going to be the low?
Well, I'm not going to try and gamble on the low. It's just too, when I've got a chart in front of me, it is just too difficult to work out whether we could capitulate and go even further or whether we're just going to have a nice little gentle glide path. If you put a gun to my head, I'd probably say the second option, a nice little gentle glide path from here until about a year from now. We'll probably be up 10% on the S&P 500.
Wow.
That's the most likely scenario for me. But there is this small probability, this black swan, that we go all the way to, March 2020 lows. But I put a small probability on that.
Why so small, given that the fact... nice to hear your voice, by the way. Given the fact that the Fed is making it very clear that it is going to crack inflation, and that could mean significantly higher rates than the market is anticipating. The move this week in the two-year has been extraordinary. The market is starting to wake up to the idea that the Fed is serious.
Guy, thank you very much. And, we're looking at all the data points as to why is it not bigger than 10% probability of a move down. And we're looking at earnings. We're looking at revenue. We're looking at cash flow of companies. We're looking at the volatility of individual stocks. We're looking at the ranges in which they're moving. We're also looking at the technicals and taking all of that data in. I mean, I agree with you. I could make a very strong case why it should fall, but then I've got so much data to the other side, which says to me, well, I just don't get the market mood willing to push it lower and lower and lower.
So the narrative that FedEx could be sort of the first shoe to drop in a true re-rating of earnings growth and profit margins, you don't buy it.
Since when was FedEx such an important bellwether stock that it's the trigger? I mean, you look at what happened in 2008, you look at the dot-com bubble, there are, of course, certain triggers. I can't imagine FedEx is it. Of course, that you could be replaying this clip forever and a day if we do drop significantly, but I don't think it's going to happen. What we're seeing, of course, is squeezes on margins. We're seeing earnings drop, but we're seeing revenues holding up. Now, that's, of course, partly due to inflationary pressure, so the nominal number looks higher. But it's giving enough ammunition to the bulls that it'll hold things up and make sure we get a slower decline and eventually start eking upwards. That's the way we see it.
If the Fed hikes 100 basis points next week, would that change your view?
100 points? Probably not. If they hike 100 basis points, what's going to happen? the market's probably going to rally and say, oh, great, they're taking action. I think it's a question of trying to work out what's the feeling, what's the sentiment, what's the excuse the market's looking for. And I don't think the market's looking for necessarily, there's enough people looking for an excuse to sell. Neither are there enough people looking for an excuse to buy. So you don't get those extreme movements. So, and 100 basis points will give enough people an excuse to say, great, immediate action. Great, they're stamping it out. That could be a bullish sentiment. Indeed, they'll say, well, now that they've taken this, the next step won't be so high, so let's not move lower.
Many have been revising their terminal rate higher now, and there seems to be an increasing need for the Fed to actively be able to price out of the market cuts in 2023. If they do that, what happens to equities?
Look, it's game theory. It's what are they going to do after the next move? And you know the market looks to the future by about at least 9 to 12 months. So there gets a point why people are talking about the market bottom. They're saying, well, wait a minute, let's just look 12 months ahead. They stop hiking. Things start looking a little bit better. Where's that bottom? And it probably will be at some point between now and the end of the year, because we'll be looking 12 months ahead. So equally, you know, those higher rates, I don't think they're necessarily such a negative that it drags us lower. And there's enough pockets of stocks moving up that you can still put money into. I mean, there was a Wall Street Journal headline, about a week ago when I was still in London, which said money's piling into U.S. equities. There's just too much money on the sidelines to make this sort of a free fall. It's going to be a parachute drop.
That means it's bailing out of Europe.
Well,
what is the picture in Europe?
Well, don't forget, it's not just the European thing. And yes, I've seen the headlines about and the data on money coming out of Europe. It's also that there's just been a lot of money sitting on the sidelines. We've had more cash than we normally have. You know, in January, we thought we'd be investing in U.S. equities like we had been for the last decade, the fantastic decade. And then February, we thought we would. March, we thought we would. And each time we look at it, it just looks like, oh, well, let's just wait another month. Let's wait another month. Mm-hmm. So, and it wasn't that we were taking money out of Europe. We were just waiting to enter the US.
Interesting.
And that's why you've got such a strong dollar. And I think it's that sideline money, which, as I say, that's the parachute which prevents free fall.
Okay, the buy the dip theory, there is money out there. Alpesh, thanks very much. We really appreciate it. Alpesh Patel, the CEO of Prifinium Partners. We're going to dig deeper into FedEx and analyze those earnings for you and then what it means for the broader economy or just for the equity market. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening. Welcome back. You are listening to The Cable. We are live on DAB Digital Radio. FedEx was meant to report numbers next week. Last night, effectively this morning for me, we got a bit of a shock. FedEx was out, effectively warning of a significant slowdown in its business, particularly in Europe, but also in Asia and to some extent in the United States as well. Alex, we just heard Alpesh sort of in some ways dismissing this, but this is a signal as to what is happening in the economy, particularly the European economy, but the global economy more broadly. There is a slowdown underway. And the comment that has caught everybody's eye here is not that we're seeing a slowdown, it's the speed of that slowdown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How quickly it's re-rating and the deterioration. That's a very frightening statement there. Lee Klaskow covers this sector and this company for us for Bloomberg Intelligence, and he joins us now. Lee, is this a FedEx thing? Is it a Europe thing? Is it a global economy thing?
Yes, and yes. But what I would say is that it's mostly a FedEx thing. I mean, you can't deny that things are not as strong as they were 3 months ago. But, you know, some of the wording in the pre-announcement yesterday really points to, it mentions service challenges in Europe. And when we hear that, we think of the integration of TNT, which was an acquisition they bought way back in 2016. The organization almost died in 2017 from a really bad cyber attack that if it wasn't for FedEx Capital, the company probably wouldn't exist today. And they've just had some execution risks with the integration, and the integration was complete recently. And so when we see that service challenges, that's kind of what we're reading into that. And if you look at their express business where TNT kind of resides, their margins were 1.7% in the physical first quarter, and that's down significantly from last year where it was 5.2%. Yep. So, we definitely think that it's probably, you know, two-thirds a FedEx problem, and maybe one-third, you know, obviously things aren't as great. And you also got to remember that FedEx has more exposure to China than UPS. And UPS, not so long ago, on September 9th, they had a sell-side analyst day. They reiterated their 2022 guidance. So,
right.
So we think it's mostly a FedEx problem.
If you were to take a macro signal away from it, what would it be?
I'm sorry, say that again?
If you were to take a macro signal away from what they said, what would it be?
I think that Europe and China have gotten weaker over the last 3 months. That's not surprising. China is still, you know, not fully reopened from their zero tolerance COVID policy, which is really impacting supply chains in and out of that country, which therefore impacts supply chains globally and demand globally. Europe, obviously, they're facing significant inflationary pressures from rising energy prices, much more than we are here in the U.S. And then in the U.S., you know, we're pretty much, I would say, more balanced. Our base case isn't for a recession in the U.S., even though that probability is up to 50%, at least according to Bloomberg. You know, we think that the U.S. consumer, their balance sheets are strong, and the labor market remains strong. So, you know, you have those two things. And, yes, mm-hmm. the Fed is tightening, which is going to have an impact. But you have a consumer. Like, I would never bet against the U.S. consumer. They do like to spend.
No, fair enough. Case in point is me. Quickly, Lee, if we learn this, it might be a FedEx issue, but what other stocks are vulnerable here in the space?
Yeah, so an investor came up with this analogy, and I think it's a great analogy. It's like FedEx is the weakest immune system, and they're always the first to get sick. So, yes, I mean, you could see, you know, the things that are impacting FedEx's business outside of the TNT acquisition that we mentioned earlier are going to impact the UPSs and the Deutsche Posts of the world. But, you know, as of right now, they are not seeing it. They are not feeling it because, like, Deutsche Post, they also had an express, their DHL Express business. They had a capital markets day on September 8th, and they were not seeing any sort of weakness that FedEx is talking about. And, again, it we just might be focused on FedEx right now, and that's why the stock is down, 22% versus 4.5% for UPS.
Mm. A good day. Lee, great stuff. Thank you for the analysis. Always appreciate it. Lee Klaskow on what is happening with FedEx and what it means for the rest of the industry and the global economy. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening, welcome back. You're listening to The Cable. We're live on DAB Digital Radio. A bunch of US data to digest today. University of Michigan consumer confidence data out a little bit earlier on. But in some ways, there's a bigger picture unfolding here. The US 2-year, the front end of the curve, is up by 31 basis points over the last week. A little earlier on, we got to, let's call it 3.9%. We've retreated a little bit from there. Nevertheless, the question is now beginning to be asked, does the market believe? Does the market believe the Fed that we are tracking upwards towards 4.5%? Let's bring Bloomberg's US rate strategist into this conversation, try and answer it, Ira Jersey. Ira, are we starting to see the market believing? If we are starting to see the market believing, how much more of this kind of frenetic activity are we going to see at the front end?
Well, I think, firstly, the market is now pricing for 4.5 and maybe even chance of a 4.75 on the Fed funds rate when you look at what the Fed funds futures and what other derivatives are currently. Index swaps, we are thinking 4.5 is now the base case scenario for the market. So it makes perfect sense that you've seen this big move up in 2-year yields because we have to adjust for all of that. The other interesting thing that's occurred, Guy, and I think this is a little bit underappreciated, is we've now decreased the glide path of interest rate cuts. So even though the market's still pricing for a cut in 2023, it's not pricing for 2 anymore, right? So we're now talking for about just a much, much slower glide path for eventual cuts in by the Fed.
Ira, you were really early on the 2-year potentially getting to 4, and I keep saying this. You've been right this whole year on what has happened in the bond market, and I keep saying, "Whoa, you really think we can get there? That's crazy!" And you're consistently right. What's going to be the top now in the 2-year?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I hate to say this. This is going to sound a little bit of a cop out, but I'm going to wait to hear what the Fed says next week before we update our forecasts. There is a big risk, obviously, that the Fed is going to remain in just inflation fighting mode ad infinitum. And what you're seeing here, Alex, and I think this is something that's missed when we look at nominal yields, like what's going on just in the 2-year and the 5-year and the 10-year. Let's look at what's going on with real yields. So this is the market's expectation using the TIPS market to determine, you know, where should real yields be? And real yields have really shot up. So you've actually seeing, and you're seeing more of this today, where inflation expectations are coming down, thanks in large part to that higher rate on the terminal rate for the Fed. But real yields really have shot up, and that's what's driving this. And those higher real yields tend to be bad for risk assets. And I think that's one of the things that's going on in the market today, where you see risk assets selling off and treasury and TIPS selling off, but inflation break-even is going down quite a lot.
Yeah, the equity market does not like this setup. Give us your sense of where the risk lies around the Fed meeting next week. Is it around 75 or 100? Is it around the balance sheet runoff changing in some shape or form? Is it around direct selling of mortgages? I'm just kind of wondering kind of where we're going to be surprised.
Yeah, so all of those things I think are risks, but I think those are a lot of them are more risks for the November meeting. So I think the Fed wants to see full runoff for a couple of months before they make any changes to the quantitative tightening program. So I don't think anything like mortgage sales or increasing the amount of treasuries that run off or even decreasing, right, because there's some structural things going on in the piping of the markets that might actually make them think about actually reducing the pace of runoff. But at the same time, I don't think that they're going to do any of that, because this month is the first month we're at the maximum runoff amount, right? So they'll wait at least 2 months before they make changes. I think the big risk for this meeting is the dot plot. Does the dot plot have 2023 hikes up toward 5%? Do we see a dot or two at 5%? And I think if we do, then the bond market in particular is going to take it on the chin, and we're going to see even more flattening of the yield curve than we've seen already in the last couple of days.
I mean, that makes complete sense. What's also stood out to me, though, is that the Fed has made it very clear what their intentions are in terms of combating inflation and being aggressive, unanimously, really. And the market still is pricing in cuts for 2023. I don't understand what the market is not understanding about the Fed, and will they listen next week?
I think, look, The Fed is listening to the market, and the market's listening to the Fed, right? So there's a little bit of a circular pattern going on here. And I think at some level, the Fed is going to probably remain on the same trajectory, saying, like, yes, we understand that there are some signs of slowing the economy. We expect that. We've been increasing interest rates now for over 6 months. We're thinking, we want to slow the economy somewhat because that's how we get inflation down, but inflation is still too high for our comfort level. And I think that they'll continue to play that narrative, at least for now, and also say that we are data dependent, right? We're going to be looking at a lot of the incoming data to determine the pace of how fast we hike. And I think that they'll go 75, though. And the reason that they go 75 this week is because going 100 means that they sound like they're panicking. And I think they have some reason not to go 100. Like, you look at the retail sales report, it wasn't particularly good. But meanwhile, you did have inflation that didn't come down as quickly as people thought it should have. So I think 75 is kind of a state of course, and then the question is, do they go 50, 25, or 75 in November? And I think that's almost more important at this point than whether or not they go 75 or 100 next week.
All right, this is a slightly left-field question. There is a rumor starting that at some point soon, maybe not this year, maybe next year, the Fed increases its inflation target by 100 basis points, 2 to 3%. How realistic do you think that is?
So for a long time, the Fed didn't have any explicit target at all. And then the expectation was always, when you talk to Fed officials, said, yeah, we're looking for some range between 1.5% and 3%, right? So having a target range is certainly easier to hit, right, for sure. And by saying our target range is is 2 to 3% means that the market's going to say it's 2.5, right? Mm-hmm. That's just the way that we're all going to simplify things. But that's not an impossibility. And when you go back to, you know, the 1990s, you go back to the 1960s, 2.5% was not particularly high inflation, right? So it wouldn't be completely shocking if they did that. I think, though, that they would do that. And if they would do that, would be in January when they change their operating standards.
Ira, thanks a lot. We truly appreciate it. It's going to be a fascinating week, but honestly, thank God it's the weekend. Ira Jersey of Bloomberg Intelligence. That wraps it up for Guy and myself. Guys, have a wonderful weekend. We will see you Monday. This is Bloomberg.